The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
And away we go. It's another edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. My name is Pete Sweeney. I'm the editor-in-chief of arrowheadpride.com, joined once again by my esteemed executive editor, John Dixon, back from seeing every crevice that this beautiful country has to offer. How was your time away from the football news cycle that never seems to stop here?
Oh, it was fantastic. We had a couple of misadventures to begin the trip, but we had a really terrific time traveling through Texas and New Mexico on the way to Arizona and all the sites there at the Grand Canyon and Salt River Canyon and the Petrified Forest. I could go on and on. We just really had a terrific time.
Petrified Forest seems a little Harry Potter-esque. I don't know a lot about the real life Petrified Forest, but for what it's worth, John is being humbled here. I called John. I don't think he'll care if I share this. I called John on Monday to reset, get him back in the loop. And listening to our conversation seemingly was his beautiful wife, Terry, just letting me know, wanted me to know over John's voice that he saved three lives on this trip by driving over what treacherous ice, John, it sounded like.
Yeah, the Google had taken us off of the highway because of a traffic slowdown that existed. It was right in front of us. We could see it.
Yeah.
And it had suggested that we take the outer road for 10 or 11 miles, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my whole life, I've seen signs that say bridge ices first or bridge may be icy or whatever. Never once have I seen one of those signs and then actually encountered an icy bridge. Well, it happened to me on this trip because there on the outer road where there wasn't a lot of traffic running over it and temperatures were in the mid 20s. At that point in New Mexico, this was in eastern New Mexico, this short bridge on the outer road was icy, and the trailer that we were pulling started fishtailing. It was kind of a scary moment. I don't think anybody was in danger of being killed, but you know,
if Terry sure
could did. We could have flipped the trailer over, certainly, and that pretty much would have ruined our vacation, I think.
Well, there you have it. The first editor show lesson from today, when you could take the road less traveled, go ahead and take the road more traveled. I think that's the way.
Well, in different weather conditions, it would have been fine. You know, it was just a weird situation. You know, 10 degrees warmer, it would have been fine. It was just because there was no, you know, that doesn't happen on the highway because there's cars driving over it all the time and it heats up the pavement and you know, it doesn't ice up. So,
well, John, good to have you back after your absence. I hope that you are refreshed and ready to go. We have to catch up on your marinated takeaways from the season and Super Bowl, the way that everything kind of played out with the parade situation and then you going on vacation. We haven't had a chance to do that. I've already shared mine, so this is going to be John focused marinated takeaways as we close out the 2023-2024 NFL season. A lot of news to get through today as well, and we will be doing that in just a second. A show update. So John is back today. The dynamic duo of myself and he will be through this show, and then I'll take my turn. I'm not going any crevices. I like to stay above the crevices, but I'm going to take a break before the free agency frenzy begins. So it'll be Steve and John next Wednesday. Wednesdays are off-season editor show day. Okay. So I'll be John and Steve next week to fill in the gaps there, and then we'll be back for the off-season for the most part. I mean, I'm sure we'll miss a show here and there, but we'll be back every Wednesday as we go through free agency and the NFL draft and all the emergency podcasts that happened in between, the schedule releases at some point in there for, you know, what will be the offseason push as the Chiefs try to come up with the first three-peat in NFL history. So it should be an exciting offseason. I know they have a lot of improvements to make, and they're starting to happen this week, the improvements, the changes. And so we'll start to discuss some of those things that have come through as we go. But first, if you leave us a rating and a review on Apple iTunes, we'll read it right here on the show. This came in on Monday, John, and I'll read it to you. We are now fully in the offseason. Rocky Magana discussed eating the camel hump in Morocco on beach season. Other than the ice cream cake, what are you and John's worst eating experiences? John, do you have one that comes to mind?
Worst eating experience. Wow. I will say that while we were in Arizona, we were in Sedona, and I had some, they call it prickly pear. It's like the meat of a plant that they turn into honey and drinks. I had a margarita made with this stuff.
You had a meaty margarita?
Yeah, that's kind of, it was kind of scary.
That sounds gross.
But it was actually good. I was kind of surprised with myself that I actually tried it, but they brought around a little sample shot glass full, and I tried it and thought, well, that's pretty good. And I actually had that at two different restaurants while we were in Arizona.
Okay.
So that was actually a positive experience. Let me see, the worst experience. Well, I'll tell you, I'm not very adventurous. So my experiences with bad tasting food is pretty limited.
Just give John an egg sandwich and a Pepsi, and you'll be good to go.
Exactly.
I think the one that I remember, I was a young kid, and I had an aunt, my mother's sister, Aunt Irene, God rest her soul, but she was probably as annoying as my mom, but like a little bit more nasally. Like she had like a nasally voice. Anyway, I was a kid. I was staying over my aunt's for some reason. And of course I wanted cereal that they hadn't touched in like weeks and weeks and months. And I was just like, I don't care. I want these cornflakes or whatever it was. I think it was Frosted Flakes cornflakes. And pouring the milk. And all of a sudden I think I see ants in it. And I, you know, alert my cousin and my aunt. And I think in the most nasally way, she goes, "Oh, shut up. No, there aren't ants in there." And my cousin grabs the bowl. Lo and behold, he goes, "I think there are ants in here." And of course, you know, as a kid, I just spit out all the milk that I possibly could and felt like I was going to die. So I don't know how that struck me, but that was probably my worst ever eating experience.
That's pretty bad. I think it ranks right up there, Pete. Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I appreciate you guys listening to that. All right. We're 7.5 minutes in. Let's actually talk about some Chiefs football. I think the biggest story we have right now, John, and it probably was an expected one, right? The Chiefs releasing Marquez Valdes-Scantling. You know, I think that, you know, when you have 300 yards of production and you're making the salary that you are or due to make, it doesn't matter what you did in the postseason to redeem yourself. Well, I think, you know, fans will look a little bit more fondly back on the brief tenure here of Marquez Valdes-Scantling that ended in two seasons and two Super Bowls. You had to move on at this number. The Chiefs end up saving $12 million of salary cap. And for that amount of production, it doesn't matter how much the salary cap was raised. You got to make that move.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I was starting to feel a little bit like it was sort of like the situation with Sammy Watkins. But Watkins, despite not having very much production and missing a lot of games, had more production than Valdes-Scantling has had during the regular season this year. Otherwise, it was a very similar situation, a guy getting a lot of money who had most of his significant production in the postseason.
Right.
But there just wasn't enough in the regular season to make it worth having him on the team with that kind of a salary. you know, if he'd had another few hundred yards during the regular season, the Chiefs might have decided to keep him on, but they have too many other things they have to do, including finding someone who get more than 300 yards in as a wide receiver. And there just really wasn't any other way to do it.
And he got his opportunities too. You saw the Chiefs playing him a lot early in the season and really could never gain that trust and consistent rapport with Patrick Mahomes. And for what it's worth, you know, had a tough year, kept a good head on his shoulders. It seemed like it didn't lead to any problems in the locker room. In fact, if you really listen to the words of Rashee Rice, who ended up being the most important receiver for Kansas City in 2023, if it weren't for some of Valdez-Scantling's guidance, I don't know if Rice comes along as fast as he did. And kudos for the Chiefs to continue believing in MVS. And he came up big for them in the postseason. I was lucky enough to be in Baltimore. That was a really tough catch to seal the game. I mean, that was a one-score game. You don't really know how that goes. I know that the defense had stifled the Ravens, and the key play was the Snead would-be touchdown for Flowers and stuff. But it was a small margin, and that was a big catch. And, of course, the touchdown in the Super Bowl. And there was another story that in overtime, it was his idea to call a certain play to get the Chiefs a first down. And so ended up being maybe more important off the field than on the field. And as important you can be off the field, $12 million is too much for not having the production. So yeah, this is the very first step. And I think he saw it coming. I think the writing was on the wall here. I don't think it was too much of a surprise. I know there had been some theories and some thoughts about him in Frank Clark fashion, maybe taking a pay cut to stay in Kansas City. I don't know. When covering MVS for 2 years, I was a little bit hesitant on that. I think he's going to try to make as much money as he possibly can. And if you don't want to pay the number that he agreed to, he's going to find a better situation for himself elsewhere. And let me remind everybody here, as I usually need to do, John, it doesn't matter if the Chiefs say something like, oh, you never know, maybe he could be back. The Chiefs have a one-way exit door, and I don't see MVS making his way back to Kansas City. I think, you know, people will be quick to be like, well, what about Mecole Hardman? A little bit of a different situation to me. You know, I think Hardman played a very specific role for Kansas City, and Kansas City realized it can make the most out of him. I think Marquez Valdez-Scantling is going to be useful to somebody elsewhere. Not going to be making $12 million, but I just don't see him in any capacity making his way back to Kansas City.
Well, you might be right about that. There have been circumstances where players have gone out there to find another job that paid them more money and have ended up taking less money to come back to Kansas City. It has happened a couple of times, but I think I would tend to agree with you that in this particular situation, the Chiefs would probably rather want to move on, make a clean break. But, you know, they'll say you never know, and you do never know.
Right. Another one I thought of as you were talking was Derek Nnadi. I think Derek Nnadi tried to explore free agency. And then, but
yeah,
no, I just tend to think MVS, even despite last year, is going to be able to make a number the Chiefs are not going to want to go to, which is part of the reason why you saw the release. All right. So MVS moves on. He went from Aaron Rodgers to Patrick Mahomes to question mark. We'll see what quarterback he picks next, but usually it's one of the top 5 to 10 quarterbacks in the NFL. Next piece of news that we have here, a little bit of mixed stories and mixed sourcing, you know, been in talking to folks, but Jordan Schultz has reported that the Chiefs replacing the franchise tag on cornerback L'Jarius Sneed. Earlier in the week, Brett Veach had alluded to the fact that it would be likely the Chiefs would use the tag to manage their salary cap as they go here. So whether it is official that Sneed has the tag, whether it is 85-90%, you see another report, it seems like this is the trend regardless. So we're going to have a conversation here, assuming, John, that the Chiefs have now placed the franchise tag on cornerback L'Jarius Sneed, and that translates to $19.8 million for a 2024 salary, which isn't a bad deal when you consider that L'Jarius Sneed was what? He was drafted in the fourth round, and so he'll make more money this year than he's made throughout his NFL career. But again, I think it's important to look at this in the way that the Chiefs have been framing it. And that is the idea that this franchise tag is really, in the bare bones of it, buying the Chiefs time. It doesn't seem like they want to pay $19.8 million and have that against their cap. And it also sounds like I felt, John, that they want to get this done as soon as possible when they figure out what they would like to do with it. The two scenarios seem to be they come to a long-term agreement on a number that Snead likes, and it gives them less money than the $19.8 million for what would be the first year. But I would assume be like a 3 or 4 year contract, knowing Brett Veach and Snead's age, where that number is lowered. Or what they might do, and you saw them do this with Dee Ford, is tag Lajarius Snead so they maintain his rights, and then maybe there's a premium draft pick, some kind of draft compensation that another team sends. They get the rights to Snead, negotiate a new contract, and probably the Chiefs were willing to go, and the Chiefs try to continue nailing these darts at the defensive back position, because if you've seen them in these past couple of years, Trent McDuffie, Joshua Williams, Jalen Watson, Nazi Johnson, Nick Jones. I mean, it's a deep room, and they're going to be facing another question and another salary situation with Trent McDuffie in a few years here, and who knows what direction they want to go in. So I don't know. That's my spiel on Lajarius Snead. If I'm guessing here, I think the most likely scenario is a tag and trade. But as you were alluding to in our last topic, John, I guess you really do never know about these things.
Well, yeah, and it depends on how the negotiations are going between them. We had a report today that the Chiefs intend to speak to both Snead and Jones's representatives today at the Combine and have what amount to be their initial conversations for the coming season. And, you know, this is going to be a thing that's done all together. You know, they're talking to Jones, they're talking to Snead, and these two things are going to kind of mesh together in the minds of both the fans and the Chiefs. You know, if Jones wants a lot more money than the Chiefs are willing to pay, maybe they say, well, we can't afford to give Snead a big contract, and vice versa. So, you know, this has been a topic of conversation for a few weeks now, which of these players is more important to the Chiefs defense, and both of them play an outsized role. And it's entirely possible the Chiefs won't be able to get both of them on board at a number that will work for them. But maybe there's a way they can get both of them. And this is a means to try and maneuver the team through this particular set of rapids. And maybe they'll get through without overturning the canoe.
I know next on our list here, John, after we get done with podcasting and the 17 other things we do, is putting up Jared Sapp's rundown of the salary cap and the updates. And so we know that while you're away in the Grand Canyon, the NFL ballooned the salary cap to a greater amount than maybe was expected. And that, you know, that's a good news for the Chiefs' flexibility, but there are also other factors that go into the salary cap. So generally speaking here, you know, and we will put up Jared's update, which he did a really nice job with. But generally speaking here, when you consider Chris Jones and his situation, when we consider Lajarius Snead and his situation, and where the Chiefs salary cap stands, wide net, what do you make of it?
Well, there's a lot less money than we thought the Chiefs were going to have. I mean, even with this big increase, which amounted to like $30 million in the salary cap compared to 2022, excuse me, to 2023. I'm still changing over from one year to the next year.
I know. Me too. February, but we're going to be March soon.
Yeah.
Thank God for the leap year, because I'd like to figure this out by March. And
yeah,
the leap year buys me another day to figure that year's thing out.
That's right. So, you know, they add $30 million, and that sounds fantastic. But like less than a week later, we learn that, you know, four of the Chiefs' 2021 draft picks are suddenly earning more money than they did before because of the proven performance escalators that are part of the league's contract with the NFLPA. And that took, in one fell swoop, $11 million away from the Chiefs' cap space. And then today, you know, we had these moves releasing Valdez Scantling and putting Snead on the franchise tag. A couple of days ago, with the new cap number, we had $28.3 million going to the Chiefs' salary cap. Now there's 9.5. You know, that's a pretty big difference in how much money's available. Of course, the Chiefs will have more moves to make They always have the option of freeing up some space from the Mahomes contract, so on and so forth. But it's what seemed like a lot of money doesn't seem like a whole lot of money right now.
Yeah, and it's a shame because I think the other day when we first get the salary cap news from the NFL, it's like, well, maybe the door is open for them to maintain both Jones and Snead. But you know, you factor in those escalators now, and it does seem like they're still gonna need to make a choice. And I think what is interesting here is that I think I coming into the offseason, John, I sort of assumed that they would have one or the other, but there's a third door here where they trade Snead, get back draft capital, and then don't get Jones back. And it's like, what is this defense going to look like? Because if you end up trading Snead and you have that room, but you do get the draft capital, you're still up against the 31 other teams that, and some of them might have more money because, you know, they don't have some of those escalators where they can kind of hand Chris Jones a blank check. So what do you think, you know, as it stands here and, you know, as you look at this salary cap situation from a bird's eye view, what do you think the chances are of the Chiefs not having either of these guys for the 2024 campaign?
Well, I think it's a distinct possibility. I mean, this is exactly why Steve Spagnuolo was brought to tears on the field after the Super Bowl when he said, you know, this defense is never going to look the same. I mean, the defense, a unit on an NFL team never looks the same the following season. But Spagnuolo was talking about something else. That, you know, there are players here on this team that are significant to it, you know, on my unit that might not be back for the following season. And it's not unreasonable to think that he was thinking about Jones and he was thinking about Snead and the possibility that either or both of them will not be back in 2024. You know, that's distinctly possible. I've been beating this horse for a long time that ever since Mahomes signed his huge contract that the Chiefs are going to have to move more and more and more towards filling their needs through the draft. That, you know, we're going to have to get used to the idea that they can't spend big money on free agents, either by re-signing their own free agents or getting them from other teams. So at some point, I do expect that we'll mostly be talking about bringing players in through the draft. And I think we have seen that. Yeah. In the last couple of seasons where general manager Brett Veach has made, you know, some big moves in the draft and done very well with the picks that he's had. And that may be the direction that we're headed here. But on the other hand, I think the Chiefs really do want to figure out a way to keep Snead, and they really do want to figure out a way to keep Jones. Whether they can is the question of the hour.
Yeah, I think as this news is coming out about Snead, like it does always make you want to go back and maybe adjust your prediction, because for a while I've kind of thought that the Chiefs wanted to keep Snead. You know, those are the things I've heard. But if you really look at the tangible examples of this recent Chiefs era, and it's limited because, I mean, as great as it's been and as long as it's felt, it's still only 5 or 6 years here. But they let Charvarius Ward walk. And he was a pretty good player for them at the time. I'm not sure if their exact evaluation of the player he's become with San Francisco was maybe what they had at the time. I mean, that's something that we will never know, maybe until this whole thing is all said and done. But at the same time, it's a pretty close, I think, comp for what Snead brings to the table. And there should be no lack of confidence in what they can do in drafting the defensive back position. They feel pretty good about their defensive backs coach and Dave Merritt. And Dave Merritt, I mean, you know, we get him once in a while. I've talked about that on this podcast. And he's a brilliant coach. You can see why his players would love him and they would play hard for him. And what he's done as far as the development. I mean, I think when his personal life affords him the ability to, he's going to make a good defensive coordinator for somebody. Remember, Steve Spagnuolo kind of came from that, like, defensive backs track. I mean, that's what he really likes as a secondary. Anyway, long story short, I just feel it's likely that Snead has moved and the Chiefs rely on, you know, what they've done well over these past years. And I don't know about Chris Jones. I think a lot of it with the Jones situation is out of the Chiefs' control. Like, is the Jones representation, you know, that we have faces to, are they going to play ball with Kansas City? I like, and history has told me that they're not. And yeah. So I hate to say it, you know, and the reason why I'm thinking out loud here is so you can see my figuring without tweeting or Xing at PG Sween and getting mad at me. I don't know about the Chiefs keeping either of these guys, you know, at this stage. Yeah. And that's the unfortunate reality. And that is one of the penalties of having success in the NFL. It's designed so that the same teams can't repeat, meaning, you know, as they do well, it's harder to keep the players and it's harder to replace them because you're drafting last and there's a cap to how much money you can spend. So it ain't like MLB where you could just back up the truck and say, we're keeping Snead and Jones forever. These are you can't win that way. So we will see how it goes. And as major news happens, I know Steve is ready behind the digital glass here to drop some emergency podcasts as we need them. And even though I'm off next week, if there's a big enough story, I'm going to have John and Steve drop out the back signal and I'll hop on here to talk about it. But I'm hoping that it's a relatively quiet week, just considering I haven't really taken a blow since like mid-July at this stage. But anyway, here we go.
The Sween signal. I like that. Yeah, the Sween signal.
I was trying to think of a witty thing to say what that symbol would look like, but I'll get back. Maybe like a version of the Scott Van Pelt Sports Center with the glasses, but like long hair and instead of his bald head. Maybe that would be the symbol. All right. Need to get into our next topic, which is there could be new contracts on the way for Andy Reid and Brett Veach. Mike Florio is shocked about this. He can't believe it. He's got his O-face on. But it does seem like these two guys who are under contract until 2025, you never want to get into the last year of the contract. If I'm Clark Hunt and I'm trying to save money, why would you want to try to sign two guys after a potential three-peat that's never been done? You know, now you're probably paying even more than you would now. And this is usually done quietly. This is very different than player contracts in that you really rarely hear about the talks that are ongoing and you find out after the fact that usually comes from the organization that they reveal, okay, these guys are signed. But again, hate to be that guy, but another I told you so moment, more so for Florio than any of you guys who listen to us, just like, Andy Reid has Mahomes. He's been waiting for him his whole career. So should his health be fine, I think, you know, you're going to see him want to continue coaching and want to chase Belichick in a way. And before I let you talk, John, it was listed that Andy Reid is eighth, they believe, in head coach salaries. That'll be closer to one. And as it had turned out, Brett Veach, who relatively unproven at the time of signing, I know they just won the Super Bowl, but a lot of that was John Dorsey's work. But he was one of the lower paid GMs and now will be up to be one of the, I'd imagine, top five, if not top one, top two, top three, highest paid GMs whenever this comes down.
Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate. We get so accustomed to knowing how much players make or believe we know how much players like it. It's always kind of shrouded in some secrecy, but we have some kind of an idea, but we know nothing about how much coaches make. There's no salary cap. There's no reason for teams to give out what they pay coaches. And it'd be an interesting thing to talk about, just as it is to talk about how much players make and what teams have to do to get under the cap. But this is a place where teams can do, just like Major League Baseball, anything they want with regard to their coaches. And I think this is a place where the Chiefs are going to spend some real money to keep these guys together, keep the team going. They just re-signed Spagnuolo to a new deal. I think Reid and Veach are both going to get deals that last 3 years, just like Spagnuolo did. And we'll be talking about this again in 3 years from now.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how Clark doesn't make them the highest head coach and GM. I just, it's been so, you know, it's been long enough now for 5 years, three titles, first back-to-back in 20 years. I don't know negotiations are hard because you have to be brutally honest sometimes about like what they're bringing to the table. And it's hard to wrap your head around the argument against them being that. And I think more so even than the titles, and I say it all the time, once you get to the Final Four in the NFL, I really, truly believe anything can happen. And
sure,
just being able to reach that point now 6 years in a row, it's incredible. I mean, it really is incredible. there's no talking about it that would be able to oversell it. That's kind of how I feel about the job they've done. So it'll be interesting to see how long the years are. That's what we will know. I don't think we will know the exact figures, but maybe there's a way we will if they are the highest paid. But fear not. I don't think, despite the Pro Football Talk rumors, that Andy Reid is going anywhere, and it seems like Brett Veach is going to be much more satisfied with his salary in a couple weeks to come. John, a quick one for you before we get into something more serious. Taylor Swift made Pop-Tarts for the offensive line during the year.
Man, what a story.
As it turns out, this came from Pro Football Talk as well. And believe it or not, this story has more truth to it than the Andy Reid retirement story. It seems very clear that the biggest pop star in the world made Pop-Tarts for the O-line. What did you make of this?
Well, I love this story. I know a lot of people are put off by Taylor Swift, but I'm not. I love the attention that she's bringing to the team. I think it's disingenuous to complain that the coasts don't pay attention to flyover country.
Sure.
And then get mad when suddenly people are paying attention to us because Taylor Swift is in the box at the stadium. I mean, this is what we have been saying for years that we want, is for people to take the Chiefs seriously. And all this is doing is making it more possible for people to do that. And, you know, if it's fun for the team, I think that adds to the team's ability to win. So I think this is great. I'm not a fan of Taylor Swift's music. That's not part of the equation for me.
Yeah.
I'm too old to be a fan of modern popular music. So, you know, just give me my Billy Joel and I'll be happy, you know. But I love that she's bringing attention onto the team. I just love that.
First of all, love that you said Billy Joel. As I don't know if you knew this or not, but I love Billy Joel.
Oh,
second
really?
Of all, yeah, cool. Yeah, I'm from Long Island, of course.
Right. We're next door
neighbors.
Yeah, Miami 2017. Yeah.
Second of all, I like that despite being what, like a virtual billionaire, Taylor Swift is still baking. This isn't the first baking story. So she's baked the offensive line Pop-Tarts, and apparently she made cinnamon buns or rolls, one of the first Travis Kelce. It just goes to show, like, people still like what they like, no matter how much success that they have. I'll tell you, yeah. John, like, I enjoy, this is a weird thing, but like, I enjoy a Yingling. I don't care if I'm the most popular NFL reporter on the planet. I'm on ESPN or NFL Network one day. Like, I'm still going to like a shitty old Yingling once in a while. And I imagine making sure that you stick with your roots is an important thing, and good for her for continuing to bake. And it seems like everything is going well, you know, as much as people thought it might be a distraction, you'll never be able to claim that, because they went and won the damn Super Bowl. And I'd contest that Travis Kelce played his best ball in the postseason. So,
and apparently gave an amazing speech at halftime of the game.
Yeah. He knocked over the bike or something in the locker room
before the game and at halftime. Yeah. And so you got to think that Taylor has a role in that as well. I have to ask you now, what are your top Billy Joel songs? So I'd love to know what you think are his best songs.
Well, so as it turned out, this was a tough situation, but I mean, it was a necessary one. I had to give up Remix to Ignition in my by R. Kelly in as my karaoke song. So I had to find a replacement for it. And so it's been Piano Man. I love Piano Man. Yeah. Of course, New York State of Mind. Yeah, I like Uptown Girl. We Didn't Start the Fire. I mean, I'm naming the hits, but Piano Man tends to be my karaoke song. So if we were to go and do Arrowhead Pride staff karaoke, which we have not tackled yet, we've done a few get-togethers and happy hours, but that would be the first song up that I would go with.
Well, right. I love Angry Young Man, and that's one of my favorites. I love the Ballad Ability Kid. I think that's an amazing piece of music. I'm also a big fan of about a dozen Billy Joel songs, but those are the two that come to mind right off the top of my head here.
Yeah,
this is cool. Well, this will be something we'll have to talk about, and
maybe in
podcast content on this.
Yeah, the second week to June to like mid of July, we have nothing to talk about. So maybe we can have a Billy Joel off or something. All right. Final two news stories. And these kind of oddly enough fit together. Not as fun as Taylor Swift and Pop-Tarts, but the NFLPA report cards came out today. And once again, just not good notes on Kansas City. You know, another way to say it. We thought they were bad last year. This was the complaints about head trainer Rick Burkholder and the locker room and the facilities and so on and so forth. The Chiefs were 29th last year. They actually managed to be worse somehow this year. Came in at 31st. Doesn't seem like a ton of improvements were made, John. And these NFLPA report cards, they drop during the combine week so they can have this press conference at the scouting combine. These came out as the Chiefs were announcing an $800 million renovation to Arrowhead that fans and taxpayers will be responsible. It sounds like for paying somewhere in the ballpark of $500 million for. And so this all kind of broke at the same time. The timing of it was tough, I think, for you know, the Chiefs and what they wanted. But here's the general gist of the NFLPA report cards. Bad marks in seemingly everything except for the head coach, which was an A+. So they're doing right by the head coach. But if you look at all the other categories, family treatment, D+, food service, C-, nutritionist, F, locker room, F, training room, D, training staff, F, weight room, C+, strength coach, C+, team travel, D. I mentioned A+ in the head coach. And the owner category got the worst grade, and that was, it seemed, again, we're just taking the report for what it was saying, but it seemed like Clark might have promised a renovation to, and to be very clear here, the training facility locker room, where, you know, you go in there, and for what it's worth, we interview players in there all the time, and I'll be honest, it's not so much better than a college. And I bet you there are some D1 programs that actually have like nicer day-to-day facilities. And it seems like there might've been a promise from 22 to 23 in the off season to get this redone. And the only noticeable change that even we as reporters mentioned to each other when we were first walking in there was they finally put in seats with backs on them as opposed to stools, which actually had been in last year's report. And I think in a way that makes this one a little bit uncomfortable because they read enough to realize, oh, the players were upset about this stool chair thing. They addressed that because it was specifically mentioned, but it doesn't seem like any other aspect from the report cards were improved upon. Now, I think to be fair, the Chiefs' performance on the field was just as good as last year. And number two, you know, we don't really know the nuances of how this thing is made. And we don't know how many Chiefs were interviewed. It's a little bit, I think, hidden in the words of the NFLPA. They kind of just put this thing out and say, accept this. And they mentioned they interviewed more than 1,700 players, but you know, we don't know how many. Still, I think regardless of all that, you would have liked to have seen more improvements on the report card, especially as the Chiefs are saying all these things about the new stadium and the vote that's happening this April and, you know, wanting to be able to use some of the taxpayers' money to make the experience of Arrowhead better. Seems like a lot of the renovations, John, are for higher paying fans. I don't think that's like too crazy of a take to make. And so I just think all of it married together made for an interesting hour or two on Wednesday.
Well, you can make the argument that the timing was terrible for the Chiefs. Yeah, that made them look bad at a moment they're trying to drum up this renovation thing. But it's also possible that the Chiefs chose this moment to release that information to counteract the bad PR of what they, I'm going to assume they knew ahead of time, before we did anyway, that they were going to get this bad report from the NFLPA. And maybe the whole point of putting this thing out there was to help mask that. That's entirely speculation on my part. I feel it's important to note that I'm just jamming here. But you know, that's always a possibility that they look at it that way, that, well, this is the time to put that out there, or maybe it was just a coincidence. You know, it's just that coincidences do happen occasionally, and this could be one of those. It's kind of unfortunate But I definitely felt last year that the NFLPA hadn't been, once we knew a little bit more about the process that they used to get the information, I felt like the NFLPA hadn't been very scientific about it.
Right.
And, you know, I still kind of get that vibe from the deal, which might be unfair, but, you know, we still really don't know that much about how it all fits together. I remember Andy Reid was pretty clear about, well, you know, they don't really necessarily know what they're talking about when he was asked about it after those grades came out last year. And I myself felt a little more comfortable about what the Chiefs are doing after Reid spoke. But, you know, if something like this is out there and people are talking about it and there doesn't seem to be much change about it, a year later, that's not a good look at all, at all.
Yeah. So, this is a very interesting report, and, you know, I don't want to get into the specifics and weeds, and I don't want to be like reported, but I think it is something that I'll share. Like, some of these things that are in here, and I'm not going to name specifics or whatever, are things that I've kind of heard in passing. There are certain things with like reports where, you know, you're on the record, off the record, and other times you're just kind of like chatting with people, and you know this, and whatever job that you do, you go out, your buddies, you talk shop, and some of the things that, you know, I've seen now on paper have kind of matched some like rumblings I've heard before. And so I hope there are aspects of this that the Chiefs take seriously. I know that the chairs were very clearly to me a reflection of last year's report, so we'll see what changes are made from, you know, what would be the 2023 season to the 2024 season. All right, we have gone through the Chiefs news. I'm sure there'll be more of it as we go. We're weeks away from free agency, and that'll lead us into the NFL draft. So we are just beginning, as they say. But when we come back, it's been 2 or 3 weeks. These are the most marinated takeaways of all time from John Dixon on the Super Bowl and the NFL season. Stay with us right here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Well, I'm gonna let this marinate.
You know, let that one marinate, and then we can circle back.
Adapt, react, readapt.
It takes time.
It takes years.
That's the takeaway.
Back here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show, because of circumstances stemming from the end of the 2023-24 NFL season, we didn't have John for a couple weeks here, and I know it from the comments, some of your comments, you have been wondering, what are these marinated takeaways from executive editor John Dixon? Well, finally, we will learn them here today. And John, as you reflect on the 2023 season, what comes to mind first now that you've been able to take a step back and look at the season for what it was?
Well, I'll pull back the curtain a little bit. It so happened that I wrote about some of this in this week's edition of the newsletter, which hit our readers' news inboxes this morning. So I'm giving you a little, pulling back the curtain a little bit on what the content of the newsletter today was about. I think, to me, this was all about the 2020 season and what went wrong in the 2020 season. I think the Chiefs learned a lot of lessons coming out of the 2019 championship. They thought they could just keep everybody and hashtag run it back. Yeah, you can't do that. You've got to keep building your team at all times, especially if you're a championship team, because the following year you're going to have a target on your back. You know, every other team is going to be working to improve to beat you. So you'd better be working to improve to be even better so that they can't beat you. I think the Chiefs didn't really understand that once they had finally won a championship, once Andy Reid had finally won a championship. I don't think he really appreciated, that part of the formula that he had to keep moving. Another thing that I thought was a lesson from 2020 is that the team had fun. Yeah. These last two seasons. And I think that was something that was sorely missing in the 2020 season. You know, when you've never won a Super Bowl, you've got nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. You can go there and be laughing and having a good time and be loose. And, you know, I've read a lot over a very long time covering football. I've read a lot of coaches and players talking about what made them successful in the Super Bowl. And quite a lot of them say that it's because they went into the game loose, mm-hmm. and they weren't, you know, all cinched up about everything. And that allowed them to play better when the big game came. And I think that the Chiefs weren't really there in 2020. I think they were all cinched up and very worried about everything. And it showed in the game.
You know, I think in that weekend as well, I mean, that was the same weekend that there was all some of that stuff with Britt Reed, and that was leading into
sure.
the game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't think that helped the circumstances. And I just think the offensive line was so depleted that it became very obvious early that that was not going to be a game that the Chiefs were going to have the upper hand in. And it wasn't for lack of trying, but Patrick Mahomes, he went crazy. It just seemed like the rest of the team was lifeless, stemming from maybe that off the field situation. And I think a little bit of the obvious factor that, you know, Mahomes just wasn't going to have the time. I mean, they just didn't have the players to give him the time that he needed to win the game. And so, you know, I think you're right though. I noticed that in Baltimore when the Chiefs were up against it, and don't let people fool you now. Everyone that week was like, this is Baltimore sheer. There's no way they get out of this game without winning it. Like, and, you know, when it came time for game day, a lot of the team, you know, except for some certain positions here and there, a lot of the team was the same from the year before. And so I made the point, like, after the game, you know, and just the feel of being there, of like, this was a lot of the Chiefs' second most important game that they've ever played, right? A road AFC title game, because they had just played in the Super Bowl in the past year.
Right.
And I think you could tell that even, like, as far as Jackson goes and the Ravens, this was the most important game, the one they had to win. And you could tell that there was like a palpable pressure. So I think as the Chiefs have won more and more, there's a little bit less of that pressure on the actual game day that is the Super Bowl. And mm-hmm. like same thing with the 49ers. I know that they had some repeat players from 5 years before, but a lot of the team was new. You know, this was a
right.
And this was, and just seemed a little bit big, especially I think, when it came to Brock Purdy toward the end of the game. He was brilliant all day, and I think he gave the 49ers a chance to win. But you could tell Mahomes had a little bit of a level of a comfort at the end of the game that you really didn't see from Purdy. I think especially when it came down, like, this is it. You know, you got to go win it, or you're not going to do it. And it just seemed like Pat was more comfortable, and that ultimately tipped the scale in overtime. All right, let's continue, John.
And you actually touched on the third thing that I wanted to say ahead. That they learned in 2020 was how important depth was.
Yep.
And that was made so clear by the performance of a devastated offensive line in Super Bowl 55 when, you know, Mahomes was running for his life. But the thing that's amazing about this, and I think this is something that's important for us to discuss, is that they made it to the Super Bowl with four reserve offensive linemen.
Yeah.
You know, that's frankly amazing. And that, you know, sure, when it got to be five offensive linemen, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had clearly prepared to play that. They said after the game, oh yeah, we knew this was the way we could win this game, by attacking the offensive line. And they did because all of a sudden it was five reserve players that were playing in unusual positions. And it was just too much for the Chiefs to overcome. And I think that that made more important a lesson that they already had learned, that it was very important for the team to have a lot of depth, because it's so hard in the NFL to remain healthy at every position through the course of a season, particularly if you're a team that's playing deep into the postseason every year and you're playing, you know, 21, 22 games in every season. You got to have guys to play when other guys go down. And I think this is the thing that Brett Veach really does very well. I know there's a lot of conversation among fans who think that Brett Veach hasn't been a good guy. He hasn't done a good job at bringing in players for the team, that John Dorsey did it much better because John Dorsey brought in Travis Kelce and brought in Patrick Mahomes and brought in Chris Jones. And those things are all true. But what John Dorsey did not do nearly as well as Brett Veach was find players to back up those star players. And in the end of the day, I am starting to wonder if that's even more important than finding stars. Any GM will find stars eventually, but the best GMs are the ones who can fill out the back of the roster. And I think that's what Veach has done for the Chiefs.
Yeah. And a little sidebar story to that, and I think it's worth touching upon because it's relevant, was the last playoff start for Nick Allegretti before this year's AFC title was the Super Bowl in Tampa.
Right, right.
So for 5 years or 4 years, he was living with this idea that, like, am I ever going to even get to start in another playoff game? That was miserable. And sure, he's been on all three teams and has three rings. He was one of the better backup interior guys in the league. But I think some redemption for him in that he was able to start in the AFC title game. And then I think even with his own brain, remembering, like, you know, we don't want to be down to the third string. I'm the second string. We don't want to be down to the third string in any position here. I know what that means. It's like, I don't care if I tore my elbow. I'm going to, if I can play, I'm going to play. And it sucks for him because I think, you know, at this point with three rings in Kansas City, he probably would like to start somewhere. You know, this is me just thinking, you know, maybe he would have that opportunity if he moved on elsewhere, but maybe there's another year with the Chiefs built in here because he's going to have to rehab, get better, and we'll see where he ends up. But just a cool story, I think, just knowing that his last start was the Tampa start and he was able to start in the title game and Super Bowl. And John's dogs love Nick Allegretti. I mean, they are some of the bigger Nick Allegretti fans in the NFL. And so you can hear them chiming in support of everything I'm saying right now.
Yeah, John, both Willie and Hershey loved Nick Allegretti. It's true.
As you mentioned, you're emptying the notebook here. Anything else that you'd like to add as far as Mariner takeaways?
No, and I'll tell you that a lot of that comes from a conversation I had while I was on the trip with our good friend Sharon, who traveled with us.
Okay,
she's a Chiefs fan, and we talked about some things. And a lot of what I just said is from that conversation with Sharon. So thanks for hearing me out, because helping me be ready for this show, Sharon. Yeah, appreciate
there
it.
There you go. Thank you, Sharon. Checks in the mail. Not really. All right. That wraps up the 2023 season. Finally, we can finally put it to an end now that we have revealed John's marinated takeaways from the Super Bowl and the season. As a reminder, Steve's keeping this train moving. We have a beautiful draft season plan for you on the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network that will include editor shows every Wednesday as we roll through the news. Ron Kopp is leading the way when it comes to free agent analysis and draft analysis, but we'll make sure to weigh in on a weekly basis after next week. Once again, I will be taking a week off, which I need, but John and Steve will be providing an editor show in lieu of my absence there. But it's been really fun, I think, John, covering the 2023 season. And as we close the door on that, we open the door on another offseason that'll lead us into a chance for the Chiefs to do something that no team has ever done in NFL history, and that is to potentially win three straight Super Bowl titles in a row. So it should be fun. So thank you to Steve for running the show behind the scenes. Thank you to John for both of them. This has been another edition of the Arrowhead Pride Editor Show. Thanks for listening.
Hey there, it's Pete Sweeney from Arrowhead Pride, and I'm excited to announce a new element of the Arrowhead Pride experience for diehard Chiefs fans. It's our brand new newsletter, Arrowhead Pride Premier. Arrowhead Pride Premier is a newsletter delivered to your inbox twice a week from me. For $50, you'll get an annual subscription packed with insider coverage from yours truly and new in-depth analysis from voices around Kansas City. It's all about what I'm seeing and hearing around the team. During the season, we'll deliver a newsletter ahead of each game to get ready for Sunday, and a newsletter after each game to unpack exactly what happened. Subscribe to Arrowhead Pride Premier today at arrowheadpride.com/subscribe.